Mother's Day, as many have pointed out, at least in the Christian tradition, is not a liturgical holiday. Many ministers are wondering how to address today in terms of worship, and especially for Unitarian Universalists, we are cognizant of the fact that people come to this church with a wide array of stories about motherhood. We come celebrating the fact that many of our mothers, and many of you who are mothers, are great. Fantastic people who have given much of their lives, and yet some of us have struggled with mothers. Other mothers have had to give up their children, have struggled with abuse, have struggled with adoption, have struggled with losing children over their lives. And so there's this tension on days like today, named in our own joys and sorrows, of what do we do with the heartache that can come on Mother's Day, holidays, anniversaries of ones we love. While it may not be a liturgical holiday, and what do you use care about liturgical holidays anyway, thought it might be useful to engage with it as much as we can. Ignoring Mother's Day would seem somewhat foolish, right? Like we're just going to pretend it doesn't exist? No, we're better than that, I think. We're going to use whatever we can to dig into it, to share lessons of parenting that are applicable to all of us, recognizing that mothers have a specific role and place in our world. It's useful, I think, to step back and see how some of those lessons that parents learn and their experiences they've had can apply in our everyday lives. I have a child, a 2-year-old. Before I had him, there was a lot about parenting that I didn't know. Still, a lot, I don't know. I'm sure many of you could tell me. It was, in many ways, a kind of classic Donald Rumsfeld moment. There was this moment decade or so ago in a press conference, and it's a line that I will never forget because I use it a lot, frankly. Donald Rumsfeld says in a press conference, there are reports that say something hasn't happened, and that's interesting to me, he says, because we know that there are known knowns, there are things that we know that we know. We also know there are known unknowns, that is to say, there are some things that we know we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know. He had a decent pay grade, too. He says, and if one looks throughout the history of our country, it's that latter category that tends to be the difficult one, as if that's some sort of surprise. Parenting is, in many ways, the great unknown unknown. All of the books, all of the conversations, people could tell me, oh, you have no idea what it'll be like. And I knew that. But there were pieces of the relationship that I did not know that I couldn't know. One of the parables that I learned early in my life when I went to church as a child was the parable of the prodigal son. I used it in the fall. I didn't want to retell it word for word here in the sermon, but many of you may know it. Just to catch you up, father has 2 sons, one of them not so great, the other one does a lot of good work. The one son goes away. Finally, years later, after the second son has been working the farm and working so hard for the father, this one son, who many sees as kind of a slacker, comes back. The father has this huge party, this celebration, and the second son is like, what gives? I haven't had a party. You haven't celebrated me like this in years, if ever. But him? He abandoned us. He abandoned you. Why him? Why now? I recognize that long before parenting, I never got the parable. I saw myself primarily as that second son, thinking I would work and stay and really feeling the same resentment. But in many ways, parenting, deep relationships, teaches us that when people come back to us, reconnect, there is something special, no matter how long they went away. One of the lessons that I think we can take from parenthood to all of our relationships is in the holy power of relationship and how special it is and how nothing, almost nothing at least, lives forever. One of the lessons, I have a sheet of paper that I've written down for Elijah, and ever so often when I am full of it and I think I know something, I write down things I think I want him to know when he's older. So far, I haven't scratched any out, but we'll see. One of them is that nothing, or almost nothing, is forever. If you make a mistake, you can go back to it. The prodigal son could come back. Things could change. Relationships change over time. It's about how we make ourselves vulnerable to one another, how we interact with one another, and how our actions or inactions have an effect on those around us. We have to be mindful of how it is we're interacting with those. Sometimes it's for the good and sometimes for the ill. Parents know this well. I, especially having a young one, was that helicopter gardener or parrot that the story talked about. Not wanting to see my kid fall and bust his head open on the coffee table or fall down the stairs or fall on a toy or fall on whatever, I would stand around him, hoping to catch, learning to try to back off. In so doing, I remembered a play on words that one of my old professors had. When I was in undergraduate, I had a Jewish studies professor, and there were several of us who really liked him, so we kind of followed him around in this rabbinical mode. There were like 8 of us in a small group. He liked to tell these weird stories. Plays on words, sort of. Makes me think of Bert Miller. One was that there's only a letter difference between community and communist. And as undergraduates, we were like, oh, that's so deep. Yeah, give us an A. So he said that. So, okay, we see that. So, next semester, he says something similar. He talks about similar words. And this time, though, it's the spring. We come up on Mother's Day. And he says, you know, there's only a letter difference between mothering and smothering. And we just looked at him. Are you okay? We laughed a little bit less that day. We were a little surprised, but still true that there can only be a slight difference between the two if we're not mindful of the effect we're having. One of the lessons that we need to learn is that in parenting and in any of our relationships, we cannot and should not do it alone. We need help in our relationships because we are well-rounded and at our best when we learn from many different people and personality types. If I only followed the lead of my family, my parents, the generation before me, I would be restricted. And the same is true for any of us. It's useful to grow and to see new people, which is one of the great things about communities, neighborhoods, coming to places like church, to getting to know new and different people. We are bound together by family for better and for worse. Sometimes that's good when we need people, and sometimes it's difficult. But in all ways, it gives us a chance to see new things. So many of us at this stage in our life are adults, and we have become removed from the stories of our childhood. We've mentioned that a couple days ago we had a memorial service here for Bert. Yesterday was this wedding. And the whole time over the past 3 days, I've thought about what were these people like when they were little ones. We're coming up on Mother's Day, and I wonder what Bert Miller was like as a kid. I wonder what the couple that I married were like. I wonder what their kids will be like, or what any of us really would be like in those days and years where our formation really took place, where our personality traits took hold and we were our genuine selves. Do you remember being that person? Do you remember whatever it was before the world encouraged you to shift just a little? To be not quite as much you as the world wants. It's hard for me to go back to that, I admit. Before worship this morning, someone, I think Lori, was in my office and saw a mask that I created, and it's a mask that's there to remind me that I and we wear them all the time. But parenting and relationships, when they work well, can remind us to take off the mask, take off the charades and the characters, and to be our truest selves. Earlier this week, I had a conversation where someone pointed out that as we age, we might be our truest basis selves. It's a little bit easier when we get older. We have less and less reason to hide behind the mask. We get tired of it. We're ready just to be us, and we don't care who cares anymore. But in reality, isn't this just a bookend? Aren't we also our basest, truest selves early in life, somehow learning to be different, shifting in adolescence and young adulthood? One of my great opportunities right now, having a two-year-old at home, is that I get to watch a lot of kids' shows and cartoons. And I am, you should know, I don't think you know this about me yet, I try to hold nuggets, you know, keep them going for a little bit. You should know that I love the Muppets. I love them. I have a Muppet in my office. I made it. I love the Muppets. And so I get to watch with Elijah a TV show that was out when I was a kid called Muppet Babies. Have any of you seen this before? Muppet Babies is on YouTube. And it's great. I asked Elijah yesterday, what do you want to watch? And he said, Muppet Babies. Because he recognized sort of his peers. We had talked about watching the Muppets on TV, but he wanted to see them as babies. Similar to him, he wanted to see them at their youngest, truest, basest self. And that's what they are in this show. Miss Piggy, Kermit, they're like miniature versions of them. Someone thought, what would it be like to go back and see these people at their youngest? What would it be like to go back and see us there? To go to that inner child and recognize how much we were loved and should have been loved and affirm that. One of the lessons that I have appreciated and gained over parenting and brought to other relationships is that all of our lives are different and that we should celebrate and not repudiate that diversity. I love these words from Marianne Williamson. You may have heard them. They've been attributed to Mandela, other folks. She says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? She writes, you are a child of God. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people feel insecure around you. We were born, she writes, to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. And it's not just within some of us. Here's that great Unitarian Universalist message. It's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. That this is part of what we're called to do in the world, to be liberated from our fear so that we can teach and encourage the children we grow, whether our own, whether those in our classes or our community, to be free themselves. And yet, it takes time and work. One of the lessons that parenthood offers is how we can be ourselves, our authentic selves, but not just that self. We should be called to the best version of that. Herein lies the holy work of moving from authenticity to transformation. And it only happens, I believe, when we are able to be compassionate with ourselves and one another. No one goes from throwing a temper tantrum and tattletelling to being a good child, well-behaved, right action, right speech, without a little bit of love, a little bit of patience, a little bit of holding and grace, some gritted teeth, probably some nudging and pushing, maybe even some silent treatment and yelling. It's hard to get from that difficult spot when we just want things. And so often the children we know, whether they are 2 or 22 or 82, the inner child wants things. It's hard to get from that to this enlightened self without love. That's one reason I loved our meditation hymn, Though I May Speak with Bravest Fire, this idea that we can do any number of things, but without love, it's for naught. There is something that calls us to care for others, even when they're not at their best, even when we're not at our best, when we would rather throw our hands up in the air, lose hope, and give in to despair. It's a difficult balance, and truthfully, there is no formula. One of the great lessons in parenting is there's no formula, and I don't know if it's different for parents in this generation or before. We had Elijah 2 years ago, and we're on Facebook. How many of you are parents of young children right now and are on Facebook? Are you on, like, new parent groups? No. They're painful. They are. My wife joined some of them, and she would tell me of how harshly other parents would talk about this. And I don't know if in the generations before, parents would do the same as they would talk amongst themselves, or if books would talk as harshly, but sometimes people get so worked up over their truth and how parenting works in their house for their family that they can see no other way. But we know as Unitarian Universalists that that can't be true, right? That there are different ways, that each of our families are different because each person is different, and that the point isn't in finding one thing that works for everyone, but in finding what works best for the whole. We come together in this space to weave together the individual threads of our lives and make a beautiful common tapestry. As we do, common themes arise, patterns emerge, and we find wisdom, we see best practices, but many parents will tell you that in that first week when the kid is just screaming and squalling and you don't know what to do to help it get to sleep, those best practices go out the window. You do what works. And in our own life, when we feel like screaming and squalling, when everything is lost, when we can't sleep, when we can't eat, when we're hurting and alone and reaching out, we do what works. What works in my home doesn't work in your home necessarily, because you are not me, and you cannot be me, which is probably a blessing for some of you. There's a verse from the Quran that I love that addresses this. In chapter 49, the Quran says, "I created you," this is God, at least in the Quran, "I created you into diverse nations and tribes so that you may come to know one another." How cool is that? An idea that we were created to be diverse, to know each other as we are, not to be the same. That's one of the great things about parenting that we can take. Our lives are not homogenous, our experiences are not the same, and yet humanity has continued for generation upon generation because people have learned to trust the wisdom of those who came before. That nugget got me into a little bit of trouble. It's a mentality that I espouse a lot and just a little too often in the months preceding the birth of Elijah, my little one. My partner and I would talk about what we worried about with the child. You know, would the birth go naturally? Would he eat and sleep? And what would life be like for him as a kid? And I would forget to be the good listener that I think a minister and maybe a partner should be. Hard to believe, I'm sure. And in those moments, I would just kind of casually, naively deflect and say, you know, people have been having kids for centuries, for millennia. I think we can figure this out. Had I truly learned the lessons of those who came before, I probably would have known better than to say something like that to someone in their second or third trimester. Would have seen that coming. And yet, herein lies one more final lesson. It's not about us. I had my viewpoint, and I shared it. And yet in that moment, it might have been wise for me not to think about my viewpoint, but hers. And we think about this so often with parenting, how mothers, many of them, regardless of our connections to them, how we interact with them, mothers make tremendous sacrifice. Parents give to their children, and they recognize that it's not just about them and how they are as a mother. A kid's world is so focused on whoever they are and whatever it is they're going through that parents have to give that over. That's the measure of sacrifice. And so it's shifting in a bit to see how we relate to others. And even as children age and become adults, you see that shift happening as they relate differently. There is a middle way, of course, It's not just that we are selfless and we never think about ourselves, but that we recognize our role and their role, our perspective and theirs, and we learn to love both. There's this phrase that I love, that we are all children of the system. We're all children to someone, all in a relationship in some way, and as such, we are meant to receive from the world. We're meant to be taught and fed and loved by the world so that we can grow. And we are meant to give to the world, to teach and feed and love, so that others may grow. When we live into this duality, this two-way mirror of life, things shift, and it's uncomfortable at first, but eventually we can make peace with both roles, and in so doing, we can make peace on earth. And that, my friends, is what Mother's Day is about. More than 100 years ago, Julia Ward Howe, a Unitarian, started Mother's Day encouraging people to think not of cards or flowers, but of peace. Hers was peace about war, hoping that all children would return home to their mothers. But today, maybe it's peace in our hearts. Peace to be whoever we are, to love in relationships, whether it's with our parents, our siblings, our neighbors, ourselves, or our community. Peace is the way this Mother's Day. Amen, and blessed be.